Sure glad that I looked out over the crowd while I was standing back over there, because that's what they say is true. They put this bright light on you and you can't see anything out there. But I got a good look at you up there before, so that's great. I just asked Mr. Knapp, I said, how old were you in 1956? And he said, well, I was 9 years old, so I've known Mr. Knapp since he was 9 years old. And he said he wasn't going to tell how old I am. If I live till January, I'll be 91. And I don't have any reason to think that I won't make it, but at least at this stage, I don't have any reason to think that. Now, I am blessed with really good health, except I have a little hitch in my get-along on my right hip. But I'm in good health otherwise, basically, and I appreciate that more than I can ever thank you, because God has really blessed me with excellent health. Now, I want to read an anonymous message that I got on a computer on email some time ago. Many of you may have seen this already. If you have, you'll still enjoy it, I know, because I really enjoyed this message. And I want to read that to you as an opener here. This boy writes, one day when I was a freshman in high school, I saw a kid in my class was walking home from school, and his name was Kyle. It looked like he was carrying all of his books. I thought to myself, why would anyone bring home all of his books on a Friday? Well, he must be a real nerd. Well, as I was walking, I saw a bunch of kids turning toward him, and they ran at him, knocked all of his books out of his arms, tripped him so that he landed in the dirt. His glasses went flying, and I saw them land in the grass about 10 feet from him. He looked up, and I saw a terrible sadness in his eyes. My heart went out to him, so I jogged over to him as he was crawling around looking for his glasses, and I saw a tear in his eye. As I handed him his glasses, I said, those guys are jerks. He looked at me and said, hey, thanks. There was a big smile on his face. It was one of those smiles that showed real gratitude. I helped him pick up his books and asked him where he lived. As it turned out, he lived near me, so I asked him why I hadn't never seen him before. Well, he said he had gone to a private school before now, and I would never hung out with a private school kid before. But we walked all the way home, and I carried some of his books. I asked him if he wanted to play a little football with my friends, and he said yes. We hung out all weekend, and the more I got to know Kyle, the more I liked him, and my friends thought the same of him. Monday morning came, and there was Kyle with a huge stack of books again. I stopped him and said, oh boy, you are going to really build some serious muscle with that pile of books every day. And he laughed and handed me half of them. Over the 4 years, Kyle and I became best friends. Kyle was valedictorian of our class. Well, I teased him all the time about being a nerd. And he had to prepare a speech for graduation. I was so glad that it wasn't me having to give the speech on graduation day, and I saw Kyle, and he looked great. He was one of those guys who had really found himself during high school. He filled out and actually looked good in glasses. He had more dates than I had, and all the girls loved him, and boy, sometimes I was jealous. Today was one of those days, and I could see that he was nervous about his speech. So I slapped him on the back, and I said, "Hey, big guy, you'll be great." He looked at me with one of those looks, the really grateful one, and smiled. "Thanks," he said. And as he started his speech, he cleared his voice and began, "Graduation is a time of thanks to those who helped you make it through those tough years. Your parents, your teachers, your siblings, maybe a coach, but mostly your friends. I'm here to tell you that being a friend to someone is the best gift that you can give them. I'm going to tell you a story," he had said. Well, I looked at my friend and with disbelief as he told the first day that we met, he had planned to kill himself that weekend. He talked of how he had cleaned out all of his locker so his mom wouldn't have to do it later, and carrying all the stuff home. He looked hard at me and gave me a little smile. And he said, "Thankfully, I was saved. My friend saved me from doing the unthinkable." I heard a gasp through the crowd as this handsome, popular boy said to us all about that weakest moment. I saw his mom and dad look at me and smile the same grateful smile. Not until that moment did I realize its depth. Now, never underestimate the power of your actions. With one little gesture, you can change a person's life for better or for worse. I wanted to read that. It touched me. I think that we have a spiritual friendship that supersedes any physical friendship that could exist, but I wanted to read that one. It touched me rather deeply. And I liked the conclusion that he had, especially very much. I liked that conclusion where he said, with one small gesture, you can change a person's life. Well, I was touched with that, and I liked it. I want to start thinking about friendship in a little different way. This is the Feast of Tabernacles, and we are aware of that, and we know and realize that we are in the second day, have the privilege and opportunity to be here together in a friendship that should be a spiritual friendship that supersedes all the other friendships that we could ever have. Now, I started thinking very deeply about how to eliminate probably what I think is probably the most evil of all of the vices that we have to face with all of the problems that we have to encounter along the way. In developing our spiritual friendship relationship. And that one vice is probably the one that caused Lucifer to become Satan the devil. And that vice is pride. I want to talk about that a bit. Pride is competition by its very nature. We've all got it. Everybody that's ever born from Adam and Eve on down, and that includes all of us, and there was only one exception that ever was not included in that, and I'll talk about that a little later. But everybody was born with pride. We have the problem of overcoming it. We have to do that. We've got to do that. Probably there was one day when the original man, Adam and Eve, didn't have any. I said one day, and I meant that. Mr. Armstrong always thought that they were created on the sixth day of creation, and on the seventh day, they spent that with God being instructed, and it was beautiful. Genesis, the second chapter, in the very last verse, says that they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. Where were they? Where were they? They were in an environment where they were obviously comfortable. They weren't dodging hailstones and tornadoes and all the bad weather and all of that kind of thing. Surely they weren't. But they were with God and not ashamed, and they had no pride. Beautiful. What a marvelous picture that was. Now, I talked about that on the Day of Atonement and said that that's the time that we want to get back to, as at one with God, as they were at one with God right there in the Garden of Eden. And my wife's son, I believe it was, that said that he was driving down the street here one day not long ago, and he saw this marquee on a church out there. They had something like, the problem wasn't that apple on the tree, it was that pear under the tree. And I thought that was kind of a cute marquee on a church board. That was the problem. And they became the problem, and what happened to them? Well, we have it right here, and I'm not going to rehearse all of that going through, because you've gone through Genesis, the third chapter, dealing with how the serpent came to the Garden of Eden, and that was probably the third day of their existence, which would be the first day of the week. Sunday, we call it. How important is Sunday to this world? It got that way probably right after creation because of the victory of Satan the devil over the creation of man that God had made. I'm going to just pick up Genesis, the third chapter here, and verse 7, I believe, is what I want to just to pick this up, where it says, then the eyes of both of them were opened when Satan came there, and I'm not going to read all of that. You've been across that a number of times. And they knew that they were naked. What they were naked before, and they never paid any attention to that. What happened? Suddenly their eyes were opened, all right, in a different way than what maybe we'd like to think about. And pride stepped into the picture instantly, and it has to deal with everything else that we have in the way of vices that arise in our lives. I could go through all kinds of them. I could turn to Galatians, the fifth chapter, and verses 19. I don't think I want to do that. And go through the Apostle Paul, when he went through them, he named them off by a drove of them there. And when you really think about it, pride precedes all of them, or any one of them, can we say? And we all have it. Now, I said, everybody that was born from Adam and Eve, and they were our grandparents of every single one of us all the way down through. And we know that. And when Adam and Eve got pride, they passed it on to every single one born after them. And so we have that problem to face. Now, it comes by all degrees, of course. You know that. We all know that and realize it, that we have to face it in all kinds of degrees. Well, Adam and Eve were here. And I want to drop down to verse 9. Just to pick up the story. Then the Lord God called to Adam and said to him, where are you? And what did he say? I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid. Totally different man. all at once. I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself. And he said, who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten of that tree, of which I commanded you that you should not eat? Well, just like any old husband along the way, it's how it happened to all of us, and I joke with my wife about that a lot of times. It's always the woman's fault, you know. And here it is. Then he said, that woman that you gave me, she gave me of the tree and I ate it. He didn't say that I had been instructed not to. He didn't say that I should have not ever eaten of that and stopped it all, but he ate of it. A man will usually follow along with his wife anyway. That's about the way it goes a lot of times. And the eternal God said to the woman, what is this that you have done? Oh, I made a horrible mistake and I should repent. No, that's not what she said. No, where did the blame go? Oh, yes, where it belonged. But she didn't assume any responsibility herself whatsoever, did she? She didn't want to do that. The woman said, well, the serpent deceived me and I ate. So the Lord God said to the serpent, because you have done this, you're cursed more than all cattle. I don't know how he maneuvered around. And I look back and forth. I really can't see anything but dark. But I'm trying to look at you anyway as I speak. Because he did this, he was cursed above all cattle or all animals. He must have been, I don't know how he managed to walk around at that time, but he was obviously getting around more than just a serpent, but he was cursed at that stage. Now, where do we go from here? Pride. We all have it. Everybody has some measure of it, and I hope we all come to recognize that all together. I want to go to John, the third chapter, and I want to use a little example here to show pride in action. Even among, and you could turn to any servant of God all the way through here and find it if you were to look at it. But I wanted to turn to this little example because I thought it was a small example of rather interesting trusted servants of God. Here in John, the third chapter, and I want to start reading in verse 22. John 3, verse 22. After these things, Jesus and his disciples came into the land of Judea. And there he remained with them and baptized. Now, wait a minute. John the Baptist was there. And he was baptizing. What was John the Baptist's very career? Baptizing. That was what he was doing. Fundamentally. See, verse 23 says, now John also was baptizing in Aenon and near Salim because there was much water there. And they came and were baptized, but then what does verse 25 say? Now there arose a dispute. I hope we reach the point where we realize if we eliminate pride altogether, there won't be any disputes. Do you ever think about that? I hope you do, because dispute was one of those issues, one of those vices that developed from pride. And there's no doubt about it when you read this. There arose a dispute between some of the John's disciples and the Jews about purification. And I won't go into the explanation of why baptism pictures some Old Testament purification, but they came to him and they said to him, Rabbi, who is this guy now that's coming here and taking over your whole occupation? Is that pride in action? I don't think that there's any question about that. There's an example of pride working right there in action. Rabbi, he who was with you beyond the Jordan, I'm reading verse 26, to whom you had testified, behold, he's taken over your career. He's baptizing, and all are coming to him. Now, thank God. What Jesus said about John the Baptist was a marvelous thing. I might turn to the 11th chapter of Matthew just for one verse. Matthew 11 and verse 11. I'll flip to that and hold your place. I'll be right back over here. Matthew 11 and verse 11. Oh, it'd be nice if that could be said about any and all of us as far as that goes. Assuredly, I say to you, among those born of women, there's not risen one greater than John the Baptist. What an awesome thing to say about any man. But he who is least in the kingdom of heaven, which we're talking about, you know, is greater than he. Now, to talk about the kingdom of heaven, talked about the kingdom of God, we want to eliminate pride. So we want to go through the process. Pride, what is it? Let's go to Proverbs, Proverbs the 11th chapter. Proverbs 11 and verse 2, I believe is the one I want. Simple verse. Proverbs 11 and verse 2 that says, when pride comes, then comes shame. Now, we all know that, and we all realize it. We've all made mistakes, and so we can say, well, I'm better than you are, you're better than I am. That's all foolishness, brethren. We're all in the same boat. The wages of sin is death, and we've committed it, and that's what we deserve. Now, we know that one came to pay the penalty in our stead so that we won't have to pay that penalty of death. But when pride comes, well, somehow we've got to eliminate it. We've got to find a way to eliminate it. Then comes shame. But with the humble is wisdom. Now, with the humble is wisdom, I think that we all ought to recognize that. I said that the dispute that John the Baptist's disciples had probably originated from pride. You know, Satan the devil, we already heard that from Ezekiel 28 and verse 15, I believe is the verse, where it says that he was created perfect in the day that he was created. Until something happened. And I think it was pride that came into him because he wanted to be equal with God or better, take over God's position, however you'd like to read it. But of course he couldn't do that. But everybody, I said before, that was born from Adam and Eve was born with that pride that Satan foisted off onto them. And so you and I are it, all of us, every single one of us. I don't have to point a finger at anybody. I can point it at myself. I've had so much of it that, believe me, I had to work hard to try to even understand it better, to know what it's like. Now, in order to do that, I want to look at the other side of it. There was one man that was not born with Adam as his father. Did you realize that difference? There was one person only in all of mankind that didn't have the fatherhood of Adam down through the generations. Think about that. Jesus Christ's father was not Adam or Adam's lineage at all. It was God the Father. Now, he didn't have pride. He was born without it. And He set the example and paid the price in our stead so that we don't have to pay the penalty for sin. But we've got to overcome it. We have to go through the process. And this time of the Feast of Tabernacles pictures the time when we'll have eliminated that. How is that going to be possible? Well, to eliminate pride, we need to eliminate the cause for it. Isn't that right? Because it's going to be here, and we're going to be tempted with it everywhere we go. I talked about this in a sermon one time years ago, and I said, it would be so nice if I could be like Jesus Christ was when he said, I do always the will of my Father. Oh, it'd be nice to be able to say that. I said, if I was coming down the street, and I was living up in Tehachapi, California at that time and was pastoring the Bakersfield Church, and I said, I'd come down that hill and there's mountains there with that wide freeway road. And I said, if I'm driving down that hill under freeway speed and there's mountains falling way off on one side and high on the other side, it was this four-lane freeway there, and if I was driving along on that right front tire, I'll get it after a while if you bear with me, that right front tire happened to blow out. I do always the will of my Father. Would you think that's the first thing to come to my mind? Let's face it, brethren, I'd fight that thing to try to get it under control, and there's no doubt about it. A lot of pride. I wasn't thinking the way Jesus Christ would think, that I do always the will of my Father. And I thought that was outstanding. I want to show an outstanding example of that, and I think it is very definitely showing. You see, Jesus Christ, as I pointed out, and I could turn to, maybe I should do that, Matthew, the first chapter and verse 18, to show that he was not born of the Adamic line. Matthew 1 and verse 18 says very clearly, now the birth of Jesus Christ was as follows. As his mother Mary was betrothed to Joseph before they came together, she was found with child of the Holy Spirit. You think the scribes and the Pharisees and the people in his environment that he walked and talked with when he was teaching them, when Jesus came back and talked to them through the 3.5 years of his ministry, they didn't know that? Sure they knew that. They knew that Mary was with child before she and Joseph ever got married. Now, I want to go back to John, the 8th chapter. And among other things, they argued with him over a whole bunch of things. John, the 8th chapter. And where do I want to start here? I'll pick it up in verse 12. John, the 8th chapter, in verse 12. Then Jesus spoke to them, saying, I'm the light of the world, and he who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. To whom was he speaking? He was talking to those Pharisees. They had just brought this woman, and you can read the first part of the chapter, caught in the act of adultery. And they all slithered away one by one, knowing full well that they had sinned, because he made that so plain to them. Now, in verse 13, it tells us who they are. The Pharisees, therefore, said to him, well, you bear witness of yourself. Your witness is not true. They wouldn't believe him. They wouldn't believe Jesus Christ was the Son of God. He told them repeatedly here that he was. And they wouldn't believe him a bit. Not a bit. You think if you were to walk out here in the street and tell people that you are to become a child of God, that they'd accept you any different today? They'd probably stone you if they could. they would call you a blasphemer. That's almost certain. You can just about depend on that. Well, Jesus was talking to these Pharisees, and he said that you witness of yourself, and he answered and said to them, even if I do, if I witness of myself, I tell you the truth. You see, he says, my witness is true. For I know where I came from and where I'm going. You think they'd believe him with that? They thought differently. I just said they knew his mother was with child before they were ever married. And they didn't think about that quite in the way he did, I can assure you. See, but you do not know where you came from, but I know where I came from and where I'm going. Now, verse 15. You judge according to the flesh. I don't judge. I judge no one. Now, he had the right to judge, and God gave him that, and he had the right to do it. But this wasn't the time for that. The time now was to pay the penalty for sin, and he was doing it, and he got it done all right. Even though he told them straight out repeatedly, I'm the Son of God, they didn't even know there was such a thing. They thought that the only God was the God that was the Old Testament God, and that was the Father himself and the only one. That's the way they thought about it, you see, back at that time. So when he brought up this concept that he was the Son of God, well, you're a blasphemer. That was strange to their mind. They wouldn't even accept that, even though he told them repeatedly. And repeatedly, he had opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to let pride rear its ugly head. And he just told them, I simply tell you the truth. And you don't believe it. I want to read that to you here a little later. It says, verse 17, it is also written in your law that the testimony of two is true. He says, I'm one who bears witness of me, and the Father who sent me bears witness of me. How plain can he make it? That there is a God, the Father, and that he was born from him. He made it as plain as it could be. What did they think? Well, they said to him, where's your father? Ah, they didn't look at it that way. They looked at Joseph as being married to his mother and should have been his father. That's the way they looked at it. Jesus answered, well, you know neither me nor my father. He's telling them the truth. Didn't let pride run away with him. If you had known me, you would have known my father also. But they didn't know him. They thought he was just one of the children of Joseph and Mary, only an illegitimate child of Mary. See, these words spake Jesus in the temple. I won't read that, but I want to drop down to, let's see. Let's drop down to verse 37. He said, I know you're Abraham's seed. They told him that we're Abraham's seed and not, didn't come from anybody that he was talking about. But he said, I know that you're Abraham's seed. Abraham's descendants, but you seek to kill me because my words have no place in you. They certainly didn't believe him. He says, I speak what I have seen with my father, and you do what you have seen with your father, or what you have learned and heard from your father, and learned from the father of pride, if you please. And they answered and said to him, well, Abraham's our father. And Jesus said to them, if you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. But now you seek to kill me. You seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth, which I learned from God. How did he learn? He wasn't educated. They always wondered, how did this guy get any education at all? Well, where did he get his education? He got it right straight from God. He says it right there. I got my education from God. And Abraham did not do that. He says, you do the deeds of your father. Then what did they say? They said to him, we were not born in fornication. Was that an opportunity for him to let pride rise right up to the highest level? Didn't bother him. He didn't let pride get away with him. He said, we were not born in fornication. We have one father, and that's God. And Jesus said to them, well, if God were your father, you'd love me because I proceeded forth and came from God. How plain could he make it? Even when they tried to test him to about the ultimate degree here, saying we weren't born in fornication. He says, for I proceeded forth and came from God, nor have I come of myself, but he sent me. Why do you not understand my speech? He answered it right there. He answered it. And the world is like that. And I found myself like that for 30 years of my life, the first 30 years of my life. I couldn't believe it. I didn't know it at the time because I read the book. And that's what he said over and over and over again. Seeing they see not, and hearing they hear not, and I was one of them. I read the book. I read the Bible through. I had a program where I read the Bible through every year by having a reading session. And I went through and I would read the Bible. And what good did it do? I didn't understand it. Verse 43 right here applied to me just the same as it did to them. It says, why do you not understand my speech? I couldn't. Because you are not able to listen to my word. I wasn't able to get it until something started happening to me. Now, I struggled with pride, a lot of it, for a lot of my life. I never went to high school a day in my life. And I suffered for that for years and years and years. I did go to college. I have a degree in electrical engineering. How much theology do you get out of that? Well, they asked me if I'd become a minister. And I said, are you kidding? I said, I've never taken a lesson in theology anywhere. And they said, well, you don't want the job then. I said, what do you mean, want a job? That's not even an issue. I said, I don't have any qualifications of being a minister. I'm an engineer. I was a supervising engineer in a power company out in California for about 10 years. And they want me to be a minister? Well, they have a way of shutting you off in a hurry. They said, well, you study the Bible, don't you? If that doesn't turn you off, I don't know what would. Obviously, I'd studied the Bible. I'd been visiting with people already in the church for four years, I guess, or 5 years, going into their homes and talking with them about the Bible, even though I was a supervising engineer. That didn't matter. I still had a lot of visits back there in the late 50s. And take the job of minister. They said, well, you'll be doing the same thing now, visiting people in their homes. And if I would have left there, there was no minister in that area. And in order to for me to stay with my engineering career, I had to move. I would have had to move away. So I decided to spend about 20 years of abject poverty with six children on local elders' pay, coming from a supervising engineer. So it's kind of tough when you face it that way, but it helped me to study pride in a little different way. It took a lot of pride for me to struggle my way through to get an education. And pride carried me through. I wouldn't quit. I literally sweat blood in order to get my degree. I don't know how many people you know that have done that, but if that wasn't an exercise of pride, I never ever heard of it. Shame on me. The Apostle Paul says he counted all of his past as dung, and that's what I had to do. When I came into the ministry, I had to close the book on engineering, and I did. And I had a whole new career that I had to take up. Maybe I was never very good at it, but I still had the awesome opportunity to teach many people. And you know, I'm 90 years old now, and I told a group of people here a while back, I said, if a guy came up and pointed a gun right at my head, I'd probably tell, hey, I'm 90 years old, I've lived my life, go ahead and shoot. I wonder what he'd say. If maybe he'd do it. Well, if he did, I hope he does it good, because I'm ready. I mean, I'm about as worthless as you can get anymore, as far as I am concerned. But I can't do the things I used to do. Those old hands still work, even at 90 years of age. But the coordination with the brain doesn't anymore, and I can't do the mechanical things I did all my life. I can't. It just doesn't work, and it's frustrating. So I have to rely on everybody to help me up the steps and walk with me out here to the podium, which I appreciated very much, incidentally. That's the way you get after a while. I had to learn to accept help from others, and I hated to do that, but it's the way it is. Let's see. Jesus said that no one has ever seen the Father at any time or heard his voice. Now, the Jews knew these scriptures, but they didn't know that. That was what Jesus said himself. No one has ever seen the Father at any time. That's John 5 and verse 37, if you want that verse. But let's stay here in John, the 8th chapter, and go to verse 39. John 8 and verse 39. Oh, I passed that. I want to go past that a ways. I read verse 43 already. That's what I wanted to cover that. You see, the simple fact is that we could never, ever come to God except he does the calling. That's John 6 and verse 44. That's right here, just back two pages in my Bible. John 6 and verse 44. It says, no one, Jesus in red letters here, no one can come to me. I couldn't, you can't, no one else. You're here because God, through his Holy Spirit, drew you. When that happened to me, I thought I was going out of my mind. What's happening to me? I read this stuff, and I go to church, and I hear the minister read stuff out of there, and then talk, and it doesn't even talk about what he read. And I says, what is this? What's happening to me? Well, God was calling me, and I didn't know it at that time. But I really do appreciate his calling. And he calls us. We could never come to him except he does the calling. Now, about pride, we want to get rid of it. I said in order to do that, there's one way. Get rid of the source. Revelation 20, verses 1 and 3. Revelation 20, And verse 1 says, "Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit." This is after the seventh trump sounds, and Jesus Christ is here. He's directing this. He saw the angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit. Every time I read that bottomless pit, I laugh, because it can't be such a thing. Any modern translation calls it an abyss, which it probably is. What a place of confinement for spiritual imprisonment. I don't have any idea what that is, but here it is. "And he laid hold on the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. We're picturing the 1,000 years reign of Jesus Christ, when Satan will be gone, brethren, gone. Pride will be no more, because the source of it is gone. Now, competition, competing with one another, they say that the reason that there's such a struggle to climb the ladder of success is there's always so many people at that bottom rung. And that's about right. Everybody wants to get that first step up. Well, we won't do that. We won't be competing. It'll be the other way around. Cooperation. None of us think exactly alike. We already know that. God made us that way. But our thinking shouldn't be, well, here's the way I look at it, and the way you look at it, and going off in opposite directions. The way we need to look at it is, oh, I could learn something if I looked at it the way you do, and if you looked at it the way I do, maybe we can get together on all of this, and we can cooperate. That's millennial. It's going to be that way in the millennium. That's the way it's going to be. Cooperation, no competition. Don't need that. I can speak a little better English than that. But we don't need that. Pride will be eliminated, because the source of it will be gone. Satan the devil will be removed. Now, God's family can be built with those people that live on into that 1,000 years. What a beautiful system that will be, with families obeying God's laws, cooperating together. And I could go on with that story as far as that goes, but I've spent my time anyway, so you had the patience to put up with me for so long. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate this. But the father of pride will be eliminated, and then there won't be any pride anymore. And what a beautiful system that will be when pride is gone and we carry out what the millennium we are picturing will really be like when it is that time.